Support for this podcast and the following message come from Dignity Memorial. When your celebration of life is prepaid today, your family is protected tomorrow. Planning ahead is truly one of the best gifts you can give your family. For additional information, visit dignitymemorial.com.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
I'm Jesse Thorne. It's Bullseye. Joe Parra Talks With You is a small, quiet show. Maybe one of the quietest shows on TV. The conceit is pretty straightforward. In fact, it couldn't be any more plain. Joe Parra, the host, plays a version of himself. He guides you through his life in the city of Marquette, Michigan. He talks about iron, or chairs, or breakfast, or the rat wars of Alberta, Canada, in 1950. And while he talks with you about those subjects, he lives his life. He visits his Nana, he teaches choir at the local middle school, he goes on a date with the band teacher. It's a sweet show. It's funny, though there aren't really any jokes. And it'll catch you by surprise with some incredibly moving moments. Anyway, I genuinely love it. I got to talk with Joe last year when the show was wrapping up its second season. And we have some good news. Joe Parra Talks With You is back for its third season. That's airing now on Adult Swim. It is fantastic. When Joe and I talked, we kicked things off with the introduction of the show's second season. Joe is growing snap beans in his garden, but he's doing something special. He's growing them into a bean arch. Here's Joe Parra.
Right now, it's a regular arch, but later this afternoon, we'll plant seedlings on either side. Over the next 65 days, we'll climb the structure, and if all goes well, meet in the middle. The snap beans will hang down so that when I walk under, I'll be able to just reach up and pick a bean. Imagine that. Not having to bend over and pick a bean, but to reach up and pick a bean. If you're tall, maybe even with your mouth.
Joe Parra, welcome to Bullseye. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. I love your show.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
How did you get the idea that this thing that you are doing on your television show could be a television show?
Growing the bean arch?
Well, not specifically growing the bean arch, although that is, what is it, a synecdoche, a metonymy? What's the thing where one thing stands in for the group of things? But no, I mean, like, your show is really not like any other television shows. And I wonder, like, at what point you brought this to a manager or an agent or something like that, and there was like, and they were like, yeah, we should take this out and pitch it to television.
Well, it's highly based on my stand-up, and it kind of came about when I did an animated special for Adult Swim called Joe Parra Talks You to Sleep. And it was just, you know, that was just the goal, to talk about nice things until people actually fell asleep and maybe laughed a little bit along the way. And then I guess, and then it kind of just grew from there.
Your show's on late. Do people tell you that Joe Parra Talks With You puts them to sleep?
Sometimes. But no, actually, I've heard from a number of people that the sleep show actually works. I don't know if it's the show or just them getting themselves in the mindset to go to bed, but I really appreciate it. When my dad would come to choir concerts that I did in high school, he would fall asleep. And I understand he worked hard. It was the end of the day, and then he had to come sit through a concert. But my orchestra teacher, Mr. Thomas, actually said, don't worry about it. If falling asleep is a reaction and kind of a good one. So I guess it kind of started from to see if I could create that reaction or just an environment and a feeling where people would feel good going to bed. And right after the show, and I think that the fact that it's on late is great because they might have the opportunity to do so.
You know, as a podcaster myself, people often tell me that they use one of my shows to one or the other of my shows to fall asleep to. You know, they'll put it on their headphones and as they go to sleep.
I think that that's a nice thing. That's very nice. A little bit, I guess people could take it as a little creepy or you could take it as creepy that they want to listen to your voice last before they drift off. But I don't know. I guess that's a nice thing that you could give them enough of a feeling of calm or just bore them to sleep.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. First of all, it hadn't even occurred to me that I could take it as creepy, but now in the future, I will bear that in mind. But I think it's hard for me to remember that what they mean when they say that is that the show is a safe and comfortable place for them. And if they are doing this to fall asleep, it may be that they don't feel safe and comfortable otherwise when they're falling asleep, rather than that my work is boring.
Yeah, no, I was just kidding. But I don't know. It could be a lot of things. It could be, I don't know, just the radio noise. Or there's got to be something. I mean, they definitely put it on for a reason. They don't listen to another show. But maybe if you're not a fan of that, you could introduce the 10-minute scream, where every 10 minutes during your show, you just scream. And so put an end to that pretty quick.
Were there other shows that when you were pitching Joe Para Talks with you, or even pitching your Joe Para Talks You to Sleep, that you talked about as touchstones for what kind of thing you wanted to make?
Yeah, it's a bunch of things. I mean, it's meant to be kind of an informational show at the start, and I guess each time it gets away from that. So I've been saying it's kind of like a CBS Sunday Morning is done by a middle school choir teacher, and oftentimes he gets distracted, and also there are jokes. But I think some of the development happened with a web series I did called Pancake Breakfast Critic, where I would go to critique community pancake breakfasts, spaghetti dinners, and stuff. And I was a big fan of Fishing with John by John Lurie, and it was inspiring in a way. And I think maybe I was in certain styles type stuff made of. Made its way into the Pancake Breakfast Critic and from that into the show. But Fishing with John, if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It's so funny and kind of calming at the same time too. I think he was trying to do something a little bit similar in terms of just having a fishing show late at night, but then it kind of became a something's different every time, but it also kind of captured that feeling of watching television late at night and not quite and thinking you would know what to expect or just getting ready to fall asleep while watching it, but then seeing something else.
Let's hear another clip from Joe Para Talks With You. So in this scene, Joe is out to breakfast. There's a lot of breakfast on the show. He's out to breakfast with his neighbor, Mike, who's played by Connor O'Malley, who also is a writer and creative contributor to the show otherwise. And they're talking about what constitutes the perfect egg bite. And they sort of settle on one bite that includes everything that's on the breakfast plate, toast and butter and hash browns and ketchup and jam and the egg all in one munch. But it's really key that in this sunny side up egg, the yolk stay intact. So we're about to hear Mike having just assembled all the layers, and Joe and the family are all watching in this diner. And we will hear as he fails at getting the perfect bite.
If we've done our work properly, we're going to have a pretty good egg bite. I love you, babe. Here we go.
Calm down. Don't laugh. This isn't funny, okay? It is serious to him. He is trying.
I need a win.
Connor O'Malley's aesthetic is, you know, you've worked with him a lot, but his aesthetic is much more intense than yours. How do you decide? when there will be a sharp joke moment like that on a show that is almost entirely, you know, consistent and gentle in tone?
I guess just by putting Connor in the episode is that it's good. Yeah, he's so funny, and yeah, we have really similar interests. That egg bite is actually based on something that he does for real at breakfast, and I was like, why don't we just kind of put it in the script and do the step by step, and that's all there was to it. But yeah, it's a balance of the, you know, when to hit on really hard jokes and when to kind of resist. But yeah, I don't know. Having Connor is just, it's great. As a writer, I think he wrote one of my favorite episodes this coming season about going to the grocery store. And he's not even in it, but you can tell that there's some really sharp jokes and stuff I could never think of because of it, and stuff that hits, you know, outside of my comedy tone that is just very, you know, straightforward, funny. I don't know any other way to describe it.
So you started doing comedy when you were 18 in Buffalo, which is your hometown. What were the circumstances?
I don't think about my starting out in comedy too much. They haven't taken the time to reflect back. But it was I thought about this the other week. It was a stand-up comedy class at the University of Buffalo. I took it while I was it was between junior and senior year of high school. And it was taught by Alan Schwibel, who was an original SNL writer. He wrote on a Gary Shandling show, and he's a great writer now, and has done a lot of great books. But there was like me and like, it was not big, less than 10 other people. Nothing wrong with it, but there were a lot of middle-aged people like looking to, you know, get into comedy. So at the end of the week, that was my assignment, to do a stand-up set, and I did it. And I don't think it was very good, but Alan was very nice, and it was good to get to do it there.
When you started doing it seriously, was it in New York City?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was doing it a little bit in Buffalo, but I realized that, I wanted to do it hopefully for a living someday, and that it's not, it's pretty tough in Buffalo, so I wanted to do it, and I knew I had to move, so I did, and yeah, it was good. I met a lot of my closest friends through doing stand-up in New York, and it's really great. It's like, yeah, I'm glad I did. It was tough to start here, but I'm very happy that I did.
We've got so much more to get into with Joe Parra. Don't go anywhere. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Is it possible to engineer our way out of the climate crisis? Some entrepreneurs want to shoot particles into the stratosphere to combat global warming. Experts say regulations on this technology aren't keeping up. The world of solar geoengineering on the latest episode of The Sunday Story from NPR's Up First podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Carvana. With thousands of options under $20,000, plus customizable financing terms and down payments as low as $0 down, it's easy to find a car that fits your lifestyle. Visit Carvana.com or download the app today. Terms and conditions may apply.
Do you ever wish you could get your stories in 3 hours rather than 3 minutes? Or maybe you're sick of doom scrolling, getting your news in bits and pieces. That is where Embedded comes in. We bring you documentary series that will change the way you think about things. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. I'm talking with Joe Para. He's the star and creator of Adult Swim's Joe Para Talks With You. Let's get back into our conversation.
Was it a difficult decision, not just to move to New York, but to decide, yes, I actually do want to do this for a living? Especially being in Buffalo, where, as you said, you know, you can't do it for a living in Buffalo, or it's very difficult to do it for a living in Buffalo.
Yeah. I don't want to be corny, but it's really kind of a dream. I knew I wanted to do it, and so when I had the opportunity, I moved, and I put my head down, and I lived really cheap, and I kind of, it's going to sound weird, but I said, like, I'm just going to focus on this and not worry about other things, I put aside a bunch of other stuff to just work on, focus on comedy, and it was so great. It was like the coolest thing, just to be kind of like when we're working on the show, when you're able to just kind of, I guess, just focus on doing a good job at the one thing. That's such a treat, to just focus on comedy and just think about comedy all the time. And I still do, but it's neat.
What's something that you didn't know when you moved to New York that you learned through that discipline?
I guess the biggest thing that, and there's a bunch of things, is just how to do comedy at the pace that I wanted to. Because I'm not a witty or quick thinking, so I figured out how to do it, and taking it at my own pace, hopefully without boring the audience. And that was kind of the goal over time.
That must have been a very difficult thing to learn to do on a New York stand-up stage. I mean, I'm sure you were playing a lot of rooms that were relatively friendly to that. You know, there are plenty of great, so-called alt rooms that you can play in New York where people are there to see something interesting. But there's also, you know, a huge tradition of fast-talking, slightly belligerent New York comedy. And like, to step on stage and own the stage without matching that energy after something like that is on stage strikes me as a real challenge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes it is fun, and I'm kind of glad that I did start in New York for that reason. I guess someone said earlier, it's like, it might be the reason why the show works on Adult Swim, is that there's something louder and faster coming before it, that when my show come on, or, you know, if I go on stage on New York during a show and the person before me was like, I love sex. Here's how I like to f-. Yeah, sorry to swear. But I do a bit about my favorite piece of pie. There's a good contrast in getting to keep that interested. I mean, sometimes the audience would be interested off the bat, but it, you know, how do I get my writing to the level where I'm writing stuff that can hold the attention the entire set, not just, you know, be talking about my favorite piece of pie, but how do I take my pie bit to the next level and make it 10 minutes and quietly entertaining for 10 minutes. And then the next guy comes on and goes, yes, I also love to f-. Excuse me, I'm sorry to swear on air, but then, you know, and then I guess it kind of worked in a nice way that they thought about the piece of pie bit. Maybe I will write the actual bit when we get done with the interview.
What was the first thing that you remember writing that really worked, that you were really proud of?
I think it's online, but it does, people in Buffalo like it for obvious reasons, but I wrote a joke about the Buffalo Bills, about how they lose for the, so that families in the area can bond more. And I remember it's like on paper, it's like a few pages, it's a 6-minute bit, and it ties together a lot of stuff, and I was very proud. I remember I spent a lot of time working on that on paper and then testing it on stage. And when it came together, it's kind of a bit that is hopefully funny and surprising, but also maybe makes people feel a little something. I don't know. I'm not sure about that, but it seems to. And, you know, it kind of leave the spaces in there to let people think about their own Sunday afternoons watching football or going on a drive with their family. And that kind of putting those things together, I think that bit in particular kind of combined the things that I'm still working on now. It's on YouTube if anybody's interested. You just search Buffalo Bills joke.
It is titled Buffalo Bills joke. I was about to mention that. I was watching it before we started talking.
Oh, cool. Yeah, not so relevant this year. Going to the Super Bowl, Jesse.
Well, we'll see what the San Francisco 49ers have to say about that when they both get there.
All right. I mean, if the Bills win a playoff game, that would be enough. But I shouldn't say that. I should say the Buffalo Bills are going to win the Super Bowl this year.
I'm Jesse Thorne. This is Bullseye. My guest is Joe Pera.
What was it like to not just have dedicated your life to comedy, but to have moved to the biggest city in the United States, one of the biggest cities in the world?
That sounds so sad. I dedicated my life to comedy.
You did a great job. You're bringing a lot of joy to a lot of people's lives, Joe.
No, it's
you should feel great
it's
about
just
it.
Very funny to say. No, it's ridiculous, but I also think, I mean, if you got to dedicate your life to something, and you said that, not me, but I'll just say, if you got to dedicate your life to something, comedy is not the worst thing.
Yeah, I mean, you were just talking about the value of dedicating your life to a thing and just practicing a craft, you know, like that's at least how I heard you talking about focusing on stand up and, you know, figuring out a way to live on almost no money so that you could do it. It's that feeling of, you know, you do it once and then you see if you can do it a little better the next time. And that is like such a fundamentally human experience, you know?
Yeah. I may have taken it too far. I had a twin bed until I was 26, 27. I guess I had such a small room, it was what fit. But it also, after the Talks You to Sleep came out, that I was like, all right, I got a check and I'm going to buy a big boy bed. I got used to it and then, I don't know.
Did you go double? Did you go full queen?
Bad. Yep, double, because then double was all that was fit, because I had to work out in my room, and I had to fit a desk in there, and this was a twin bed and the desk, and then that was it, and then I just kind of got rid of the desk and had a bed, and that was most of my room.
Do you have that thing that a lot of comics have, where if you are not doing time on stage, if you're not getting up, then you are sort of itchy and out of sorts?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's been bad. Last season, I did a better job of getting on stage throughout the process, but this season, I've not done a good job, and I think that I'm more anxious because of it.
What do you get out of doing it?
I don't know that much about meditation or anything, but I think for those moments on stage, you have to be very present, and it's kind of a focused thing, and you get the energy from it. Also, people laugh.
Yeah, that part is great.
Uh-huh.
But I have to say, like, I had a, for two glorious months, I had a stand-up show at the Ice House in Pasadena that a friend who's a comic sort of bequeathed to me and my buddy.
Uh-huh.
Neither of us is a stand-up. And we had done a lot of comedy on stage of various kinds. But I have to say that by the time the second one was done, I was like, I don't think I care enough to develop the skills to entertain people who aren't there because they want to be entertained by me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a certain, I know a guy who's a like a cabaret performer, and he feels about busking the way that stand-ups feel about doing stage time. Which is like, yeah. He's got to get out there on the street corner, even when he's booked in a stadium that night. He gets out on the street corner that afternoon and does his act.
Mm-hmm.
Because he loves the challenge and the thrill of convincing people who are just wandering past to pay attention.
Yeah. One time, it was a couple of years in, it was kind of dumb. Well, I don't know. But I got the idea maybe I could try and do stand-up on the subway platform and make some money. So the first time I did it by myself, the next time I asked some comedians, but basically, it was late at night on the platform, and the trains would come every 10 minutes. And I just kind of, I had a sign that says jokes, complimenting ladies, and guesses your favorite food. And I would just kind of, if nobody approached me, I would just start telling jokes, and hopefully it would catch somebody's ear and they get a laugh, and then they turn, and it was kind of neat. And over a few hours, you know, in 10 minutes, you have to catch people's attention. And then once the crowd starts growing and laughing, then you're kind of in business. And then once you got that, then the pressure's on. And if you can deliver, you make a couple bucks. And it was kind of, I didn't do it all that often, but it was like a good learning experience and just how to make sure the jokes are super sharp, especially like, you know, quieter ones. It kind of like helped that when I had a bunch of jokes at that period of time, I kind of threw them out there at that point, and I knew which ones were like very good and which ones were only medium, based on how they worked, if they could keep people's attention there. And it kind of, I don't think it changed the way I do comedy, but it definitely helped me identify what's a good joke versus what's a great joke.
Did it help you make the rent?
I think I made like 50 bucks.
I mean, that's not nothing, Joe.
Not quite there, but I remember the next morning I went out for breakfast and bought myself a New York Times. I read it while eating breakfast, and that was like, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, that totally rules. Reading the New York Times while eating breakfast is great.
Well, it's more ethical than stealing it from somebody's front porch.
I mean, if you could up it to two shows a night, maybe you'd treat yourself to a New Yorker.
Yeah, true.
We'll finish up with my guest Joe Para after the break. Don't go anywhere. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
On Wildcard, the new podcast from NPR, you'll hear people like comedian Jenny Slate reflect on their lives. What is something you think about very differently today than you did 10 years ago?
Dressing, like not salad dressing. I've always loved it and I'll never stop. Dressing my body.
That's all part of the new game show, Wildcard, only from NPR. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Why is everyone so obsessed with traditional wives or trad wives on social media? This week, we're talking about the viral videos of women making marshmallows and mozzarella from scratch, and how behind the sheen of calm kitchens and cute fits, there's some interesting pessimism about our modern world. And that's worth digging into. Next time on It's Been a Minute from NPR.
Hi, it's Jesse Thorne, the founder of Maximum Fun. It's the Thanksgiving season, and I want to take this opportunity to thank you, the members of Maximum Fun. This Max Fun Drive, your generosity and your love of pins helped us raise over $90,000 to help bridge the digital divide. Families without internet access struggle to do things that the rest of us might take for granted, especially during COVID. Going to school, applying for jobs, finding medical care. Your donations help the nonprofit Everyone On. They provide equipment, services, and training to get people online so they can access opportunity. You can find out more about the great work Everyone On does at everyoneon.org. Thanks for supporting Maximum Fun. Thanks for supporting everyone on. And thanks for being awesome people who want to do good in the world. Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Joe Para. He's the creator and star of the TV show Joe Para Talks With You. On that show, Joe guides viewers through his hometown of Marquette, Michigan, where he works as a school choir teacher. Joe Para Talks With You's third season just kicked off on Adult Swim. Joe and I talked last year. Let's get back into our conversation.
I want to play a scene from Joe Para Talks With You that's really lovely. It's from the second episode of this new second season. Your character on the show has a girlfriend named Sarah Connor. Yes, the same name as the woman from The Terminator. She's played by Jo Firestone, who's a great New York comedian and also hosts a podcast in the podcast network that I own. And basically, the two of you work at the same school, and you're spending all this time trying to figure out whether to tell the people around you that you're dating. And she maybe is uncomfortable with it, and you are burdened by her discomfort. And in this scene, we hear you, Joe, tell Sarah that you got kicked out of Little League for running around the bases, even though you were out in the last at-bat of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I know it sounds childish, but it feels so good to get that off my chest. I guess I was still embarrassed from when Coach Hasler had me turn in my cap and uniform.
It takes guts for you to tell me that, and I don't fully understand it, but I can respect it.
Every time we've driven by a diamond, I've held it in.
Are there things you do or choices you make to ground the show in humanity and reality rather than it being either abstract absurdity or abstract corniness, you know, Hallmark Channel type abstraction?
Yeah, none of us are, well, there's some exceptions, Joe Firestone and Joe Scott and also Connor. Maybe I'm not a great actor, but also like a lot of the people that we cast on the show aren't like a lot of the kids in the choir. They're kids from the Milwaukee area that, you know, we don't want a bunch of child actors who sing perfect. We want the kids to be themselves and sound like a choir kid. When we did this new season, we needed a beauty salon, and we found not only the perfect beauty salon that kind of reminded me of the one where my own grandmother got her hair done, but the owner, Yvonne, was such a great personality and interesting person. I mean, she spends her entire career talking to people all day long and finding out what they know and keeping them entertained while she cuts their hair. You know, who better to cast than that? Sometimes it makes things tougher, but I think these decisions to shoot in real places, use real people, and let the unpolished stuff go, it kind of adds up and hopefully grounds the show in a bunch of choices. And also me and Marty Scalzpo, the excellent director, don't 100% know what we're doing, so we just kind of embrace a bunch of the flaws of the show, and instead of trying to smooth them out, include them. And I hope that's fun. Like, Joe Firestone's not going to like this, but in episode 8 of last season, she walked right into a doorway. And I don't know if anybody really noticed, but stuff like leaving in shots where she walks into a doorway or where I almost trip or something like that, you just, you know, don't bother taking them out, because that's what people want to see, people run into doorways, I think.
Are you proud of the show?
Yes. We put everything we have into it. I know it's not like the most polished show or anything else, but kind of the thing that we said going into it is, you know, we don't have the biggest budget or, $50 million an episode, but Sorry, bad joke. But yeah, what we just tried to say is everybody on the cast and crew, we try and care as much as we can about the show and all the decisions and the edit and every step of the way from the scripts to the edit. We just try and care more about the show or as much as possible, because that's, you know, I'm not the smartest, so we can't make it the smartest show or the even the outright funniest show, because Danny McBride is doing that. But I don't know. I hope that those intangible qualities kind of carry across, and just that caring and the from everyone is just people hopefully will be able to sense it when they watch it.
Well, Joe, I'm glad you're proud of it, because as much as I love Danny McBride, and I do, I think your show is my favorite thing on TV. I love it so much, and I'm
really
yeah, for real.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely for real. I mean, Mandalorian is fun too, don't get me wrong, but
oh no, you're going hard on Baby Yoda now too.
No, oh, I like no. I like Baby Yoda. I like Mandalorian, but I like your show better.
Hey, thanks.
That's the honest truth, and I'm really grateful that you took this time to be on Bullseye. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jesse.
Joe Para. His show, Joe Para Talks With You, is airing now on Adult Swim. You can also watch it on the Adult Swim app. If you haven't seen it before and you're looking for a place to start, I recommend the episode Joe Para Reads You the Church Announcements from Season 1. In it, Joe's character hears Baba O'Reilly by The Who for the first time. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye is created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California, where this week, as I am recording this, my children are maybe 100 feet away, screaming pretty loud, so sorry if they're occasionally interrupting this narration. Our show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones, our senior producer, Kevin Ferguson, producer Jesus Ambrosio. Production fellows at Max Fun are Richard Roby and Valerie Moffett. We get help from Casey O'Brien. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is by The Go Team, thanks to them and to their label Memphis Industries for sharing it. You can keep up with our show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. We post all of our interviews there. And I think that's it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Hey, I hear you have a birthday coming up. Yeah, you. If you're listening to this, that means you have a birthday coming up eventually. And here at Life Kit, we want it to be a special one.
Magic can happen and good luck can happen and serendipity can happen if we're open to it.
How to have a good birthday, even if you're not a birthday person. That's on the Life Kit podcast from NPR.